The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray in the studio, joined by Casey Keller and Craig Burley. And lots to get to, including World Cup qualification. We will begin with Spain's game. They took on Sweden in a game that Spain only needed a draw. But in the end, they were able to win it at the death. The 86th minute, Alvaro Morata, a substitute, scoring on the rebound to send his side to the World Cup in 2022. This is the Group B standings. After that result, it means that Sweden will be going via the playoff route next March, as we now welcome in Jan Agafyartov and Luis Garcia. Luis, I'll start with you. Spain left it late, but they got it done in the end. You must be delighted.
Yes, of course, we are happy. We know that it wasn't going to be an easy game. We know that it wasn't be one of those games that Spain will remember for all the time. But it was about to be solid, to be pragmatic, to try to get the result, and just start thinking about what is going to happen in the World Cup. It wasn't easy. Sweden was waiting at the back, trying to make those transitions. Laporte and Pau Torres were, for me, the best players on the field because they could hold those movements from Isaac that was not able to get any chances, or from Forsberg, or even Ibrahimovic in the second half with his power and his height. But at the end, it was about trying to score that first goal to give that a little bit of confidence. It was a lot for being waiting, but at the end, it was those 3 points to get Spain to the World Cup. And yeah, it's not the best game, but at the end, it was the best moment to the Spanish side to get the result and start thinking about what is going to come in the future with these young, fantastic talents that are coming out from this Spanish side.
And Alvaro Morata with the winner, Craig. He's had so many ups and downs with the national side just this year alone. This is definitely an up.
Well, I think scoring the goal that seals it for you if you get to the World Cup is definitely on the highlight reel for sure. Just because of the pressure and because you really never know as a manager, as a fan watching what you're going to get, as a teammate even, what you're going to get from him. It could be something sublime and then it could be something ridiculous. So that's kind of how his career's went. But you know, every now and again he pops up with some important goals. But I think you and I did this game live and I was saying at the time, I don't think we realise sometimes just how the likes of Sweden, who seem to be continually at major championships, without the superstar, you know, Zlatan's hanging on, but the big superstars that they once had, Sweden, they're not really there anymore, like a lot of the countries. And yet this team, when I watched them, generally always make it difficult, really difficult for the so-called big boys. And they've punched above their weight for a long, long time. I mean, it wasn't too long ago the front line for Sweden was Ibrahimovic in his prime and my former teammate Henrik Larsson. I mean, they don't have those kind of players anymore, and yet they continually are competitive against nations that have had huge success at World Cups and Euros.
Casey, Spain surprised many in the last Euros, Euro 2020. Now we know they're going to the World Cup. How do you rate them?
I think that you guys talked about it a little bit earlier in the day, where it's a transition period. And you're really asking for some young players to emerge into something that we know they possibly can be, but we don't know if they're going to be that yet. And it's a big ask. And I think at the other thing, when you're looking at Spain, you're still waiting for that world-class goal scorer. You're waiting for a Raul or a Fernando Torres or a David Villa, or where are they coming from? They haven't come up yet, and I don't know if they can win a major championship without a real marquee striker. I know they did it before with kind of a false nine, but then again, look at the midfield that they had at that stage, which they don't have right now.
I don't know what the guys, it'd be interesting to know what everybody thinks, but Sergio Busquets today was 133 caps, right? Listen, trust me, from people that have played international football, that's amazing. I mean, it just has amazing continuity and consistency. However, I think his selection today went somewhat to say, we can play Busquets against teams that we know we're going to dominate because we're going to have a lot of possession. But I'm not sure Spain, when they go to these major competitions and play the elite level teams, can afford to play without the Coques and the Rodris. Because I think Busquets, as good as he has, as brilliant as he has been, the defensive aspect of the game now for him is a problem against really quick opponents that are quality around about him. That's not Sweden. And I think that's one of the pieces of the team, particularly with young Gavi and others around there, it's inexperienced. That's one of the pieces of the team that Luis Enrique has to get right, because I think better teams in the world, you know, the Euros and the World Cups, can play around him now. He hasn't got the legs to get around. Yeah, he can pass the ball. He's experienced, he can fill gaps, but he can't get around and plug those holes that Rodri and one or two others can.
Right, look at today. I mean, it's a prime example. You've got a Swedish side that had about 25% possession, but still had the better chances to score the games. And you give those chances. Look, Forsberg on another day scores both those goals, and Spain are in the playoffs. So it's something that cutting edge, but then you still have to have the athleticism if you do have a wayward pass that you can stop a counterattack. And those guys that you just mentioned can do that.
Luis, what are your expectations for Spain in the World Cup?
Listen, sadly, I hear the guys and I totally agree with them. At the end, Busquets is a fantastic player in the middle of the park. He can hold the ball. He can manage to bring that balance to the game, but he needs players to run for him because he's not that Busquets. But it's normal, I mean, because of his age, he's not able to cover all those gaps when they are quick transition from the other side. But I still believe that he can be a major asset for the Spanish side when it comes to the most important moments, because he can bring that experience of knowing where to speed up the ball in the game, but to slow it down. But it's true that we need to bring players who can add more goals on the score sheet, because at the end, we go all those Morata, Dani Olmo, Sarabia, who can bring a little bit, but still need players in the middle of the field to bring more goals on the Spanish side. So hopefully, and fingers crossed, this Spanish side realize about that. Luis Enrique work a little bit on this 11 that is going to continue moving forward. It's going to be changing because he showed that he can make a lot of rotation with different players, as we've seen with Raúl de Tomás. Suddenly we found him on the 11 started for two games in a row from the Espanyol, a very good team here in Spain this season, but still not the normal thing that we've seen in the national team. So we expect a lot from this Spanish side, but we need a little bit more going forward if we want to arrive later on the World Cup. So once again, I think we got talent. I think we got experience on the field. We need to figure it out how to bring more goals on the side, because if not, I don't think that this Spanish national team can arrive later on the World Cup.
And Jan, what about the Swedish national team then? They're no strangers to the playoffs. How do you think they're going to do?
Well, first of all, I think Sweden have had a good campaign. And when we're talking about Spain, we also have to talk about Sweden, because it was more or less Sweden who gave this away. Remember, Sweden winning at home against Spain, and they had the match balls in Greece losing. They had more or less a match ball in Georgia losing there. So this is a Swedish team. Craig said it. There's not like the superstars that they used to have. But I also have to think about conservative Nordic coaches like Janne Andersen today. You need a goal. You're desperate to get a goal away from home, and you take off Emil Forsberg. And you could see on Emil Forsberg was thinking, what is going on here? But having said that, Sweden, as you said, Kay, they're used to the playoff. I'm not sure about their seeding, but they will be a good team in those playoffs. But remember, it used to be this home and away game. Now it's differently with the semifinals going into the finals. So I think that makes it more open.
Don't worry, Jan, you're not the only person that doesn't know the seeding, because nobody knows.
I could try, but I'll buy you.
Well done, UEFA and FIFA. Make it more complicated.
All right, thanks so much, Luis Garcia, for being with us. We'll let him go and celebrate. But another game that was a head-to-head.
Why is everybody celebrating?
Well, he's celebrating. Spain are going to the World Cup. There you go.
Quiet cup of tea.
Portugal taking on Serbia. Portugal just needed to draw this game. Serbia needed to win it, and win it they did at the death, causing a big upset as Aleksandar Mitrovic got the winning goal in the 90th minute. Julian Laurent will now join us. There you go. Serbia, 20 points. Portugal behind them on 17. It's the playoffs for Fernando Santos, Cristiano Ronaldo and co, but Serbia sealing it and on the way to Qatar 2022. You know what, Jules? You called it yesterday. You were the only one who did. You must be feeling pretty smug now.
Yeah, no, not so much that, okay. It's just I, having been watching this Portugal team for a long time now, they were with France in the Nations League, for example, they have been so underwhelming for such a long time that I could see this Serbia team going to Portugal with a lot of confidence themselves. They changed manager in March before the reverse fixture, actually. They've done well under Stojkovic and they have a lot of talent. But more importantly, they play as a team and they can play different way with the back three, with the back four, on the counter, with more possession. And I just thought tonight they deserved it so much because they were by far the better side. And Portugal so disappointing again. And after watching them against Ireland twice, only drawing this Portugal side, winning late in certain games thanks to Cristiano only, I just had a feeling that Serbia can definitely do it, and they did, and again it was completely deserved.
Line for line, hey, that part.
Tell me something, let's put this in context. Jules called this yesterday. Who was on yesterday's show?
But no, Stevie and Ali were both on the show.
Right, doesn't count.
No, but then yeah. I still think there were a couple more and everyone said
count.
Portugal.
Doesn't count because of who was on the show. Listen, is it just me, Jules, or what? Okay, Fernando Santos might get Portugal through the playoffs. He probably will. Yeah, they had success unexpectedly in Paris in 2016. But surely to hell they can hire somebody when you look at the talent pool they've got to get better performances and results out of this squad.
Completely, you're right. For me, this is the biggest problem that they have. No one else, nothing else. It's all down to Fernando Santos, because 2016 was great, of course, the biggest achievement in that country's history, football-wise, no problem. But that was achieved in a certain way that suited them at the time, of course, no problem. But since then, they've offered nothing. And I think with the players and that generation they have right now, and you're right, especially with all the very talented Portuguese coaches that they've produced all in the last 10, 15 years, they should have a manager that make them play better than this. I mean, tonight, the substitutions, once again, were dreadful. The setup was dreadful. And with the ball, he was so poor again. They don't play football anymore. He took responsibility after the game, thankfully for that, on Portuguese TV. That's not enough. I don't care that afterwards you said, oh, it's my fault, my bad, sorry, we should have played better, we should have set up in a different way, not so conservatively, all of that. I could not care less. Now, you lost a game and in a group that you should have never finished second of that group, let's be honest here, with the players that he has in his squad. And I think he should have left after 2016. That was his peak. Well done. Great on you. You're a legend now. He went on 2018. Wasn't great. 2020 wasn't great. And now this, I think, for me, this is the biggest problem they have.
But the winners on the night, is the ones that you picked, Jules, Serbia. What can we expect from them going forward? Can they make a splash next winter?
I think they're very awkward to play against. Before the show, I was talking with Jan about Kostic, for example, the left wing back, or he could play a left winger, left midfielder, wherever you want. But the quality of that left foot and the crossing is amazing. When you've got Mitrovic in the kind of form that he is now, albeit in the championship with Fulham, he scored 20 in 17 games, I think, who a year ago missed a penalty that prevented Serbia from going to the Euros, for example, and now he's the hero with that winning goal. But when he gets that kind of service, Vlahovic is having another great season, Fiorentina, Tadic with Ajax. So all those individual brilliant players that they have, but if you manage to make them play well together, like Stojkovic has been doing since taking over, one defeat in 12 now for him and for the national team since he took over, I think they can be a threat for anyone, because they will be solid, they're quite strong defensively, they've got great midfielders too, they can play with the ball, as we said, they could be quite efficient too, and it's just a team that is awkward to play against because of all the different qualities that they have. So I would not want them in my group for sure.
Okay, well, for more talk on World Cup qualification, be sure to check out the ESPN FC page. Subscribe over on YouTube. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Manchester United are reported to have stepped up their pursuit of Zinedine Zidane. They're hoping to persuade the Frenchman to replace Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And when you see his managerial record, you can understand why he is said to be the chosen one if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is to depart the club. Jan and Jules now with us to talk about this one. So Jules, last time we spoke to you about this, you said that Zidane wasn't interested. Has something changed?
Not really, no. The thing is, like the article in the Sunday Times here in the UK said it this morning, United are hoping to be able to convince him or to persuade him, that's the word they use in the article, to maybe accept the challenge. So it's far from certain that they can do that. They're hoping that Cristiano and Varane, being in the United squad now, having worked under Zidane, of course, in those glorious years at Real Madrid, can help convince him to come over. But the issues stay the same. He doesn't speak the language, and for him this is a huge problem because a lot of his management is about demand management. So you have to be close to your players, to your dressing room. If you don't speak the language already, it's a problem. Two, he was never took in even as a player to manage in England. I don't think he thinks that the style and the sort of rhythm suits him that well. And two, and three, the most important, really, is that he's waiting for the France job, which is his dream job, which he knows will be his once Deschamps steps down, whether that's after the World Cup, so that he could just have to wait 11 months now or 12 months, or after 2024 Euros. But there's no point coming to a job now or soon and sign a three-year deal or three-and-a-half-year deal or two-and-a-half-year deal if in a year time you will want to leave that job to go and get the France job. So there's still a lot of obstacles, I think, for Zidane to arrive at Old Trafford. But of course, you can always convince people with a lot of persuasion, a lot of zeros on the checkbook. And I guess having Cristiano and Varane can potentially help you, but it would be far from easy to do.
Yeah, three good reasons that Jules did give there as to why he wouldn't be interested in it. But yeah,
there we go. Let's go to a break.
You've got players like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Lighten the break up, roll the break.
Rafael Varane, he's won big with those players before. Can you see him coming in at Manchester United?
Hold on. He has won big with Rafael Varane.
Multiple times.
And many, many others who were actually very good and were serial winners. Look, I can't repeat what Jill said, because every time we've been on this show in the last 18, 24 months discussing where Zidane might have gone, where he might go, England was never an option, no matter if it was Chelsea coming up or Liverpool or United or anybody. And it comes back to the same thing. Does he want to live in rainy Manchester? Probably not. He doesn't speak the lingo at all, probably apart from the real basics. So as Jill said, that's a major issue. And he's waiting on a much bigger cake, which is the French job. So I just don't see how. And how's it going to be a few extra? He surely doesn't need a few extra pounds here or there. You know, he's not a guy, it seems to me, that's going to do something for the money. He's going to do it if he thinks it's right for him. And not that Man United are not right for him, but they'll put the whole package together. And I just don't see how it's going to change.
A manager won titles at Real Madrid. Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
But the way that Zidane did it, though, and how he did it.
And it was his Champions League as well.
Yeah. But look, Zidane was great. But he was great because it was his old club. He came into a situation where he was able to re-spark something, which is excellent. But all the points that Jules made and Craig just made, it makes things significantly more difficult for him at Manchester United. Do you want to go into a situation where you have to be working through translators, doing something with still one eye on something else? When were Manchester their most successful? When was Arsenal the most successful? What, when you have a manager that is there for a long period of time and you have this level of stability, you bring in a guy that's already thinking, oh, it's a stopgap until this becomes available, and I'm not really sure I want to do it in the first place. Well, there's your answer if you're Manchester United.
Just before we go to the guys, I think the fact that we're on an international break and these stories are leaking out is... And look, you know where I stand on the Man United manager, but this is not good. This is not good.
It's not good.
Well, it's not good for Solskjaer. I think his days are probably going to be numbered anyway. But it's just not a good look all round for Man United. The way that they're sort of sitting on their hands, unable to make a decision, potentially talking to people, things are getting leaked. Brendan Rodgers, Zinedine Zidane, they're looking around. They've got a manager. They've got a manager. It's their choice. They've chosen to stick with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They have to start doing things properly. Manchester United have to start making sure they do their business properly. I know it's an international break, but this is not a good look. These leaked stories about trying to persuade people to come to this football club. It's just not a good look.
Does that show then, Jan, that support is actually waning for Solskjaer, the fact that we are seeing stories like this in the international break?
Well, yeah, if you see the story, how it developed today in the social media was quite interesting. At the end, English media, German media was quoting English media. Then English media quoted German media on their own quotings. And of course, I agree with Craig, the last week, so we can talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is probably the beginning of the end of his range at Manchester United. But the last couple of weeks, I think, has been embarrassing for all the people in and around the club that has been leaking stories, this and that, what was going on. And I think this with Zidane, this is what it is. It's something they just come up with. He's the best available manager now. He got Varane, Cristiano Ronaldo there. Everybody knows that he can't speak English and he wants to have the French job and so on and so on. So after I knew that we were going to speak about this today, I spoke to someone at the club and it was not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And then they said there was no chance that this was going on. There is no chance that they know Manchester United in trying to convince a manager who doesn't speak the language to come to England and do the Manchester United job. And if we were in the management of Manchester United, then if you take a manager on now, you need someone who can, first of all, be a man manager, talk with the players, be close on them, try to change the style of playing in the middle of the season. How can Zidane do that? Having said that, Casey, I would just say that sometimes we talk about Zinedine Zidane, what he did at Real Madrid. It was just something he did while passing in and around the club. He has a fantastic record at Real Madrid, and you can compare him with some of the best managers at Real Madrid.
But I think that's why Brendan Rodgers' name has sort of been raised quite a few times. I'm not saying he's the best, greatest manager out there who they should go for. But in terms of who's available, United have sat on their hands and Conte's went somewhere else and Pochettino's gone to PSG. Allegri's gone back to Juventus, not to say that's the right choice, but these were all experienced managers that were out there at one point and United chose to stick with what they had. And now they are potentially, and I'm sure they're having a conversation behind the scenes, they're potentially looking around at what the alternatives may be. And I think Brendan Rodgers' name has popped up. Now, there's a Liverpool connection and I get all that and they didn't win the league, but he actually, and I know one or two don't like him, but I think if you look at his career and you study it, fantastic at Swansea, really good at Liverpool up until they capitulated, but they should have won the league. They played some great football. Huge success at Celtic. And there'll be people out there that say, Celtic, Scottish football, easy to win. No. What's happened to Celtic since Brendan Rodgers left? Rangers have taken over. They were winning everything. Goes to Leicester, builds a good squad there with good recruitment and have been competitive and have won the FA Cup. And I think what United might be doing is saying, look, this might not be the ideal scenario for us, but we have a guy here who has proven himself at least And that might put us in a better footing than where we are at the moment. And I think that's why we're seeing Brendan Rodgers' name mentioned. And it's been mentioned because I think they know deep down they're not going to get Zidane.
Well, there'll be more talk about all the latest topics and the rumours on the Gavin Jules podcast. Make sure to download it. The latest one will drop tomorrow. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Well, maybe this team have been talking to the man in the mirror, because things are going well for the US men's national team. Three straight wins over Mexico, and next up for them is Jamaica. Casey, it's a great achievement. There's no taking away from that. But is there a danger of getting carried away here? Like, if you assess this team on a global level, how good are they?
Emerging. The hard part to assess this team is, I think, one of the matches, I don't think it was this match, but it was maybe the Costa Rica match, I think you had an average age of like 20. So it's really hard to get excited about a good, talented young group of players that we're still waiting to see. And I think that's been part of the reason why there's been an inconsistency of lineup, because Greg Berhalter is still trying to make those assessments at this level. You can have a bunch of friendlies, you can have a Gold Cup, you can have a Nations League, and okay, these guys are available, but then they're going back to Europe, and then we're gonna bring in some MLS guys, and we're gonna do this. But World Cup qualifying is a different ball game. And the tricky part too about CONCACAF is everybody wants to play their friendlies in America. So the US goes for these stages before World Cup qualifying, and all their matches are a home friendly. And so now you play away in El Salvador in a World Cup qualifier, or away in Panama, or away in Jamaica, and you're like, wait a minute, that's not the same team I just played 6 months ago in a friendly in Washington, D.C. And so you have a group of players where nobody's been through these cycles before. You don't have six starters who've played in two World Cup qualifying cycles and five starters who've played in one World Cup qualifying cycle. You have a bunch of kids that are having to do this for the first time after not qualifying the last time around, and you're figuring it out as they go along. And so it was a slowish start. Now it's starting to get better. And we talked about it in the broadcast the other night. The two wins this summer were great. Those were tournaments. Anytime you can win something, it's great. But this is the game that really mattered. This is what we're going to see if the heart has been reestablished in this squad. After a first half where Mexico were the better team, came out the second half, got the goals, got the big 3 points.
But I mean, I'm not talking about the game. But as a generalization, even from that debacle of 2018, it was 2018, wasn't mm-hmm. it? Trinidad and Tobago, which is less than 4 years away, it's just mm-hmm. 3 and a bit years. This US team is unrecognisable.
Exactly.
That's a short period of time. You know, we've talked about in the show today, Luka Modric and these other players, four World Cups, and there are many, many others. This is unrecognisable.
Right.
So it's you know, and whether Greg Berhalter was the guy long term or not, I don't know. But what you do know is they've got a talent pool that is certainly something that you can work with. Now, how he's going to mesh it all together and get the balance right is a different story. But what I would say is, in terms of transitioning from the old guard to the new guard, I mean, they've taken the biggest brush possible and just gone and swept it out. That's never easy to do.
Well, and the great part about that, too, is you also have a point in time where you've got the most players ever playing in Champions League, the most players ever playing for the biggest clubs. Yeah. And so it's a good spot to be in. But you're still talking, you know, and we'll go back to you know, let's just say your biggest star in Christian Pulisic. You're still talking a guy that, is he going to be fit for you? You know, Gio Reyna hasn't been in for the last couple of camps. That's, again, 18-year-old player. You know, you're talking about, you know, Weston McKennie in and out at Juventus. You're talking about Musa, who has struggled to get minutes at Valencia this year. So, yes, it's this great young team. You know, let's go back to the goalkeeping controversy. Zach Steffen playing, you know, a handful of minutes for Man City here and there. So, yes, it's big clubs. Yes, it's talented young players, but it's also that balance between minutes playing with their clubs, fitness in time for the national team, both in form and minutes. So, yeah, there's good place to be in, but still question marks.
Yeah, and it's exciting, and that's a good thing. And we'll definitely talk about Christian Pulisic in a minute and the minutes that he's getting with Chelsea. But with all this in mind, what do you expect against Jamaica?
Well, you've got suspensions. Miles Robinson is center back. You get a good pairing. You keep a clean sheet against Mexico, and then you got to take one of your center backs out. Weston McKennie getting his second yellow card. So then he's going to be out of that equation. So, but then do you look at someone like a Bucios, another young player at Venezia, getting some good time in Serie A? And is it his opportunity? And I think that's the tricky part. You're looking at opportunity. You're not looking at, okay, great, here's a guy who's got 300 games in Serie A. You got a guy that's got a handful of games in Serie A, and you're hoping that he can come in and do a job, if that's the direction that Greg Berhalter is going to go. So, again, there's always a question mark, and you know there's going to be changes. You know you're going to go into a place in Jamaica that's a tricky place to play, where they're, a couple of their big boys decided that they wanted to come into camp this time, and they're desperate as well. Jamaica has to win if they have any hope of at least getting into a playoff.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of talk about that game, looking ahead to it on the latest Football Americas with Seb and Herc. The latest episode will drop tomorrow. Christian Pulisic is said to be one of three Chelsea players on Xavi's radar to bring in at Barcelona. That's along with Hakim Ziyech and Callum Hudson-Odoi, all of whom have been battling for minutes at Stamford Bridge this season. Jules, what more can you tell us?
I can tell you that it's a really good idea, of course it is. But the reality is that financially, those deals are going to be very difficult to do because, as we know, Barcelona don't have any money to spend. And I think Xavi has been made aware of that by Joan Laporta when he arrived at the club. The fact that you can't go and spend big on transfer in January, probably not in the summer either. So you can identify all the players you want, and especially some who don't play much in their club, to attract them to Barcelona. But he will have to be in a clever way, either alone or alone with an option to buy later on, maybe, that you can trigger if you want to. But again, that can't be too high because they won't have that kind of money. It's very difficult. I can see why he would want the pace of Hudson-Odoi. Ziyech, I don't know where you play him, considering how strong the midfield is right now at Barcelona, with Gavi, with Pedri, with De Jong and Busquets. Yes and no, as we explained before on the show. But then if you go and get Thiago Alcantara, who's also been linked to a return to Barcelona, or someone like Ziyech, or someone who plays in midfield, is difficult. Pulisic, you can play him wide, of course. There's Ansu Fati, Dembele, but they're often injured too. Memphis can play centrally. So yeah, you can go for options. But those deals are going to be very hard to do because they've got no money at all. And I'm not even sure, even on loan, how much of the wage of someone like Christian Pulisic they can afford at Barcelona. So they will have to even agree that with the parent club, whether that's Chelsea, Liverpool, PSG, whoever they go for, that they won't probably be able to pay the full wages of those kind of stars and big names. So it's going to be difficult for them. But we knew that before, and I think Xavi is very much aware of it too.
But Casey, let's say the chance was there for a player like Pulisic to go to Barcelona. Would you advise him to do so?
I would go to Pulisic. I'd advise Pulisic to go anywhere where he's going to play week in and week out. If that's Barcelona, brilliant. If it's not, then why would you go? So that's the tricky part. But the trickier part for Pulisic is, can he stay fit long enough to play week in and week out? I think his form has shown at times – that he could comfortably be a starter at Chelsea week in and week out if he can get that run enough to really win the position and solidify it and give the manager the confidence to know I can count on this guy week in and week out. That's first and foremost. Now, what I have seen at times is I have seen players leave England who have had struggles in being fit and then being able to stay fit week in and week out. I don't know if that's something that Christian has to look at. I don't know if that's something that's even a possibility, but first and foremost, be available for every minute of every game and then let your talent do the talking.
Pulisic's issue is, for me, is clear. It's not a talent issue. As Casey said, this is a fitness issue for him, and it's something that he needs to... Before he starts thinking, or anybody starts thinking about where he's going to go or what he's going to do, he has to solve this, because this will become a noose around his neck in terms of, if this continues, you know, these little niggles that get worse, and as we all get a little older and you start chasing your tail and you get frustrated, you push yourself more, you rehab harder, you get more frustrated, you pick more injuries up. The more injuries you pick up, the more off-putting that is to potential suitors. And so he has to solve this fitness issue to start with and get consistency. Once he does that, as Casey said, he can get game time, and then he takes it from there. But the most important thing for him is crystal clear. He has to have a run or a period, a six-month period minimum, where he's available for Thomas Tuchel to select. And that, I think, over the last couple of years, hasn't happened. There's always been something niggling away.
And sometimes it's you know, like this last time, it's a kick on the ankle, or it's nothing that he doesn't know. It's nothing that it's not a frust. Probably even, you know, the most frustrated is Christian himself. That he's unable to do this. But to really take his career to that next level, he has to be available.
Well, Xavi Hernandez, we'll get to see what he's working with next weekend when La Liga returns to your screens on ESPN+. It's the Catalan derby, Barcelona taking on Espanyol. We will get a look at what it's like. Life begins for Xavi in the dugout at Barca. We cannot wait to see what happens next.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Group H show-off between Croatia and Russia, Croatia needed to win to ensure that they would be going to the World Cup. Russia needed just a draw, but lost out in the end. It was an own goal scored by Kudryashov that gave Croatia all 3 points and their ticket to the World Cup next year. Russia will now have to settle for the playoffs. 81st minute is when that own goal came in, Jan. What a dramatic ending.
It was unbelievable. It was a waterlogged pitch and then Kudryashov doing that because of the ground. But having said that, Croatia, and I feel for the poor lad, I mean, now they have to go over the playoffs, but Croatia are a much better team, and it was not a good pitch for them. It's good for Croatia because they are the best water polo nation in the world, so I think that came good at the end. But with Modric, as you see here, the quarterback, I mean, for them, that the ball was stopping all over the place was not good for them, but very impressive of Croatia. It's a young football nation coming out of Yugoslavia, and they're more, except for South Africa 2010, they've been to every World Cup, a great football nation, and it was an intense game in Split because of the pitch, and it was fun to watch. It was an entertaining game, and it had to be one of those things that an own goal or something, because Russia didn't do much. The last 10 minutes after they got to 1-0, they tried to do something, but Croatia held them off. And it's great to see Modric, Kramaric and the rest of them at the World Cup, I have to say.
Yeah, Modric, 36 years old, Jules. This is going to be his fourth World Cup. He said after the game that Croatia deserved it because they were the best team in the group. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do completely. I thought they were by far the better side today against Russia. They drew in Russia, by the way, in the reverse fixture. The only game really where they were disappointing was that defeat against Slovenia in the opening game of their group qualifiers. But apart from that, I thought they were the best side of it. And there's the old generation, of course, with Luka Modric at his age, and the ones who led that team to the World Cup final, of course, in 2018, but even before that. And then there's that new generation, the likes of Vlasic, for example, who are very, very talented and coming through too. Zlatko Dalic doing a really good job as a manager on the bench still. And I think they completely deserve to go.
Meanwhile, in Group J, North Macedonia won their game over Iceland and have clinched second spot in the group. Germany had already sealed first spot by far. But as for North Macedonia, they will now be going to the playoffs. Jules, it's not been a bad few years for North Macedonia, has it?
Incredible, really, and that's the best story, really, of the day, the fact that they managed to book that place for the playoffs ahead of Romania, just a point ahead, after their win against Iceland. The big difference, of course, was that time when back in March when they beat Joachim Löw and Germany, which was the huge surprise at the time. They were on such a great momentum going into the Euros, where they qualified their first ever with Goran Pandev, by the way, who scored against the Germans, who now has retired from international football, still playing in Italy, but not international football. But I guess they kept that momentum and all that confidence now with this current squad, changed managers after the Euros as well. And I think that's carried them through the remaining hurdles, really, to go to the World Cup playoff. They knew that Germany was untouchable anyway, so it was always, the aim was always that second place. And his Bardi is a lovely player from Levante that we see on ESPN Plus in La Liga. They've got Elmas from Napoli, so they've got all those good talents. And then as a team, that's where they're the strongest, though, because they've got so much solidarity. Team spirit is great. They work for each other. They fight for each other. We saw the Euros that, of course, they're not good enough to compete with the best, but to book their place in competitions, they can do that for sure. And again, for the playoffs, you'll have to count on them to cause problems to whoever they face.
Iceland bubble burst a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't go out in Iceland, do we?
Yeah, there's just some new darlings now.
I'm sure
Denmark, North Macedonia, there's a few taking that role. In Group G, Netherlands had it in their hands. They just needed 3 points to qualify for Qatar when they took on Montenegro. They went 2 goals up, but then they were pegged back in what was described by Virgil van Dijk as a scandalous second half. Louis van Gaal also saying that his side threw this one away. Jan, you'd have expected more from them, particularly with how the game started.
Well, it was an interesting day, Kay, yesterday. I went to Ullevaal Stadium, see Norway play Latvia. We couldn't score. It was a 0-0 game. We should have won it, but we weren't good enough without Haaland up front, of course. And then I came home, saw Netherlands 2-0 up, then 2-1. Well, there is a little hope. And then 2-2. So now the arrogant Dutch, and they call themselves arrogant Dutch, by the way, after the game. Now they call themselves that after the game. Now they are playing Norway at home on Tuesday. So Turkey is going to Montenegro. So we have to beat Netherlands. That is not easy, but Montenegro showed us that it's possible. And then Turkey should win at Montenegro. Montenegro showed that yesterday it was possible. So for all football fans out there, hope die at the end. So there's still a hope for us.
Best of luck to your Norway, Jan. Monday's
schedule. Jan had bumped into our Dutch producer.
Maybe. World Cup qualifying on Monday. Check out Group C. It's going to go right down to the wire because of Italy and Switzerland drawing the penultimate game. Now Italy have to go away to Northern Ireland and Switzerland are at home to Bulgaria. They both are level on points. Italy has 2 goals more than them and need to ensure that it finishes that way. Need to win, really, just to make sure things go their way. These are the games that are coming up on Monday.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. I'm off to talk goal difference and
so it's the same goal difference, but the same goals.
Same goal difference, but one team had scored more.
Well, why didn't you just tell me that?
That's what I said. I just didn't say it very
let's
well.
Do it again.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll see you next time. Welcome into Extra Time. We've got Casey Keller. We've got Craig Burley.
You're yawning there.
Oh, you were yawning.
I was.
Had you been reading about the playoffs?
He's studying up. He's going to be our expert on.
I mean, I'm already looking forward to the 48-team World Cup.
Yanagifyotov.
What is Russia's placement now that they're in the playoffs?
Yeah, where are they seeded?
It's whatever they want.
Easy.
Yeah, just to give you some context, I started to explain the playoff paths for the World Cup to Craig the other day, and I think he nearly fell asleep. So none of that today, all right?
Two teams, playoff, it's complicated.
Just win your games and you'll get there.
Yeah, just win your games. Yeah. All right, we start with
Scotland
you, Casey.
Might get. I was told by Derek Ray, our colleague, yesterday that Scotland might get North Macedonia, and I went, not bad. And I've just seen North Macedonia's results, and they've got considerably better.
They're actually not bad.
They're actually not bad.
They're not bad.
All right.
Not bad, so it might not be that simple.
For Casey, what countries do you see... Oh, here's another one that we can't get Craig started on.
Yeah.
What countries do you see as the dark horses next year in Qatar? Don't get Craig started on dark horses.
Obviously, we're a little ahead of ourselves, because the only teams that have qualified aren't really dark horses. It's the biggest of the big boys for the most part that have gotten through. So, but the one thing that I will add, as we don't know yet, is anytime the World Cup ends up in a new venue that's not Europe, that's not South America, it always leaves little surprises. We saw that in Korea, Japan. We saw that down in South Africa. So now that it's the first time in the Middle East, I wonder if that will just be that little leveler and we'll have the odd surprise.
A little surprise. What are you looking at?
Bleeding adverts. Looking at World Cup winners.
Oh, I thought you might have been looking up a definition.
Because you're going to ask about a
dark horse.
And then I was going to scroll down all the World Cup winners and tell you there's never been a dark horse.
Yeah, they're all massive. Yeah.
But it's usually someone who goes further than you expect.
Right.
And then,
right.
And
England.
Then England.
England is the biggest surprise. 66, Craig. You don't have to look for that.
Gareth Southgate's got a new contract.
Well.
Italy. Would Italy be the dark horse again?
Well,
if Italy go
a dark horse is a team that exceeds expectations, right?
No, you can't talk to the marquee countries. Yeah.
Denmark is a dark horse, even now.
I can throw them in. I can throw them in because I agree with Casey. You can't say that the ones who are qualified now for the World Cup, it won't be dark horses. But having said that, you see Denmark. I also like Serbia. Serbia is a strong, great, balanced team. Maybe they can go further. And we don't know about the Qatar. How will it be? Winter World Cup and so on and so on. Well, maybe there could be some surprises. Yeah,
who knows?
The 95-degree Winter World Cup.
Right.
Do you remember when Yugoslavia broke up as a country and they weren't allowed into Euro 92 and Denmark won it after having not qualified. That's a great...
Greece.
In Euros.
But at least Greece,
Yeah, but at least they were qualified.
Yeah, but
Denmark
they scored two goals the whole tournament, more or less. And
it was in Portugal.
Sorry?
And it was in the host nation.
You can't... Ronaldo and stuff like that.
Hold on. Are you poo-pooing my Denmark thing? They weren't
no,
even
I like
in the competition.
Denmark was
no, but Greece.
Denmark was one of the biggest of
who
all.
Who was it? Otto. Yeah. Who was it? Who was the coach?
Otto Rehhagel. Otto Rehhagel.
But I think that the thing that I think makes it more difficult in a World Cup when you throw in the Brazils and the Argentinas and stuff like that. That's why I think Euros are kind of set up a little bit more for.
Do you know how many dark horses
we're
will be?
We're talking about this.
But wait, wait.
But I will stop this, Craig. For the Euros, for the surprises, it wasn't that good example. Denmark was a great example, but Casey got a point. At the Euros, there were only eight teams. Eight teams.
Yes. Yeah. No, that is correct.
All right.
Euros were Euros was a very small thing then, and it grew. How many dark horses will be at the 2026 World Cup?
Oh, don't get you started on that. Oh. Listen, we've got to move on because this will go on forever.
46.
Yan.
46.
Yes.
Oh, it's a number that we're asking you. With approximately how many goals will Kane finish this season in the Premier League? How many goals this season for Kane?
Nine.
Nine all season?
Yeah.
Would anybody like to go higher than that?
I think he'll go higher, but put it this way, not as many as if he had transferred to Man City.
Oh, Craig.
Oh. 15.
All right, 15. So both of them go higher than you,
15.
Jan.
Yeah.
Is it time to finally say that Modric is one of the greatest midfielders of all time? The way he keeps carrying his national team and Real Madrid at 36 years of age is truly not talked about enough. If he were Spanish, he would have probably been called the best ever. This is from John Honesty.
No,
Jan? Why not?
No, but because we are talking about best ever here. I mean,
no, he's saying if he was Spanish, he would have probably been called that. But is it time to say he's one of the greatest midfielders?
Best ever, a best midfielder ever is a quite highly priced when in talk of Johan Cruyff, Xavi, Iniesta. There are so many, Zidane and so on. But Modric up there, we saw him today, how he's the old-fashioned quarterback. Every second pass for Croatia, he gets the ball. And have a look at his trophy cabinet. He's up there. He's up there with the best. We will always discuss him. When we're talking about the best players in the world, we're not even talking about Zidane and remember how good he was. So Modric is up there,
okay.
But not the best.
I think one of the problems is the terminology
within the tweets that we receive.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we here are wordsmiths, and we can sort that out. I think people will be shouting at me. People think I'll be serious.
Right.
I mean, they won't realise.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, right?
Cheek. But they don't know. Sometimes they do. I think a better way to put it would be, he has been one of the great midfielders of his generation.
Correct.
I don't think there's a doubt about that.
I'd agree with that. I think that's a great way, because I think it's, when you start talking all time, you have to take generations out of it, you have to take styles of play, and you just have to say who had an impact that is still remembered forever. And you're really talking about, you know, handfuls of players. And look, Modric is as great as he's been, you know, helping his country get to the World Cup final. I mean, it, you know, everything that he's
winning
done.
All those Champions Leagues,
correct,
with Real Madrid.
Everything he did. I agree with you on that's a that's
but
a
he
tough
left
task
Tottenham as a very good player. And he went to Real Madrid, surrounded, and it's easy to fold.
But that helps too, though.
Yeah, but you, as you know, when you go into a scenario with big players, it's sometimes easy to go the other way.
Correct.
And you can fold.
And he's a leader too, though, Craig. He's become a leader in the.
So he went from Spurs under Harry Redknapp as a very good player into a squad of better players, and he stepped it up and became a sublime midfielder. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That goal, Yanni scored against Scotland in the Euros. I mean, it's just not many people can do that to Scotland.
The only thing you can do is to be best in your generation. It's not possible. I love my football history. I go back to the 50s. I didn't even live in the 50s. Ferenc Puskas, Di Stefano, all these kind of players. You can't compare them. But Modric is one of the best in his generation. I think we can agree on that.
Okay. We're asking you another question now, Jan. How do you rate Christopher Nkunku among the best youngsters in the world right now? He was consistent throughout this season as well.
You have had a great season in Leipzig, scoring goals for fun, scoring in the Champions League. There is a lot of young players coming through now, and he's one of them. And he's also interesting because he's in a club that likes to sell their players, or don't like to sell their players, but they do sell their players, and that makes him more exciting to follow because suddenly he can get a move this summer and then he can come to a club near you.
Okay. Casey, what's the perfect job that would coax you out of media into managing a team? And what team / situation would it be?
I think first and foremost, I think like anything, that if you're going to take over, you want to know that you're the person that can make the decisions, that there's not just a whole bunch of layers I think the other thing too is you look at a lot of people that get into coaching, particularly straight after they retire, and the big part of that is it's this unbelievable passion that they want to coach. Myself, the main reason why I got into media to start with was when you're a player, and obviously Jan and Craig can attest to this, you're treated like you're about 10 years old. Be here at this time. Leave when I say you can leave. Eat when I say you can eat. Oh, you know how tomorrow's supposed to be your day off? Well, I'm not happy with the way you trained today. So you're all in here twice as early tomorrow and staying twice as late. You know, I wanted to get into a situation where I had a little bit of control of my life at that stage. And media, you know, gives you the opportunity to do that. So it would really have to take something special.
You mean you didn't have to be here today?
No, it's a choice. It's not even,
but it was on my schedule.
Not even
and I actually came in when I was like, nobody's now telling me that for the rest of I have a schedule where in football the schedule can be thrown out the window in a heartbeat.
Oh, don't worry, one can as well. Trust me. You know, the perfect job is one where you get paid lots of money and do very little.
Would you do it? Would you leave?
I'm doing it now. I'm doing lots. I mean,
you're
sorry.
Doing so much. That's why you were yawning at the top, right? Would you ever leave us here at FC if the
it's not been my choice.
Yeah.
Might not be my choice.
No.
What would it take? Would it take? Like the
I'd have to be a golf pro.
Okay. Oh, so you're not even football manager?
Oh, nothing to do with football.
Right,
no. Not a freaking part of football. Nothing.
All right.
But I wouldn't be one of those coaches.
Kay, can you imagine Craig Burley being the manager, walking into a dressing room 8 o'clock in the morning after losing a game the day before? I mean,
what are you saying, Jan?
I'm not saying anything. I just let it out in the room.
Well, see, Nico has said the same thing. Mm. And you've got it all wrong. I mean, I would change.
Yeah. that's what I tell my wife, Greg. I would change.
It's funny because Nico laughed as well. But I would change. He said I couldn't. Because he reckons he knows me better than me.
What, you'd change your clothes?
No, I would change. I would not. I would be much calmer.
Okay.
All right.
No, but I understand. No, I understand. You can't do that. 20 years ago, you could be that madman in the dressing room. Yeah, okay, all right. I'll stick to my day job.
All right.
I'll stick to my day job because I'm really busy.
What was it? Yes. What was it like interviewing Mourinho?
That was interesting, challenging, because I had to stay calm, because I always know that when Mourinho comes to an interview, I've interviewed him before, he always gets a role. He just decides which role he wants to go. I did the same in Bordeaux when he lost 6-1. Then he was the guy throwing people under the bus. This time he wanted to have a go at the referee and the reporters. And the interview before I interviewed him, he interviewed in Italian. I don't speak Italian, but I know where he was going, so I was quite good prepared for it.
That's interesting, isn't it? I've interviewed Mourinho a couple of times, and the best answer he ever gave me, I was setting him up, thinking of the managers that he's worked alongside under, to say, who's been the biggest influence in your managerial career? And he took a split second and went, I think myself. That was his answer.
Really?
That was a role, yeah.
So that's Mourinho for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got to love him. All right, to all, if you were a manager of a club, what kind of rules would you implement? Now, this follows on from, obviously, Xavi with his 10 rules that really did upset our Stevie Nicol. So, Craig, what type of rules would you have if you were a manager?
We've just had this discussion. Common sense.
Number one, common sense.
I think I would try and take parts of what I saw playing, and the guys have all seen different stuff. Some of it have been the same, but I saw bits that from certain managers that I thought, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Because it's just, that is just getting, managers would do something and say, right, this is what we're doing. And you go back in the dressing room and there's 20 guys going to the captain or whoever, what the hell is this all about?
Right.
So it's already getting the players back up. You know, so I think you'd look at it and you try and take your experiences and say, what would I lay down as the groundwork for
having a framework for some stability, but not completely annoying the players.
Right. Well, what do they say? The more rules you have, the more rules you have to abide by.
Right.
So you have to discipline, and you have to go from there. So, you know, pick the ones that are really the most important. I think if you start from the very starting point and be on time, because that's the respect for everybody else.
Exactly.
That if you're saying right now that I'm so important, I don't have to even show up on time. But look, have the respect, be on time for the time you're supposed to be at training, the time you're supposed to be out on the pitch, and go from there.
Yeah.
Rules are there to be broken, Jan.
Yeah, they do. I had Felix Magath, and he had some rules for us at Eintracht Frankfurt. But I agree on Casey. First of all, be on time. When I was a sport director for the national team, and I so annoyed when I heard about the regime before us that the people came playing for the national team and coming too late to meetings, to the bus. So the first rule I did was the bus was leaving. And the first one who didn't come was one of the members of the board. And I love it because that was a great way of showing that. But I think that the best rule you can get into a team is to get the players to take responsible for these kind of things themselves. Because we are a team, we know that if someone is not doing his stuff, indirectly, that is something to do with me. And if people and boys, we know that from our time, in our generation, there were, for example, players who had too many kilos, eating the wrong stuff, drinking too much alcohol. Sorry, we have to get them out.
Yeah, we can't drink 48 hours before a game. 47 and a half, you're all right. 48 hours.
Well, it has to be a cut-off point.
Yeah. I think it's changed days. And I remember I didn't miss. I was late for a game at Stamford Bridge.
How late?
Well, the boys were getting changed.
Oh, okay.
But there was nothing I could do about it. And this is why a lot of the preparation for games have changed. Mm. I'm driving from Hertfordshire to West London, coming in through North London, and I'd lived there for 9-10 years. I knew all the back roads, and London's so busy, as Casey knows, that I knew every little nook and cranny back road. And I got stuck in sort of Shepherd's Bush, Hammersmith, about 4 miles from Stamford Bridge. It was gridlocked. And I tried every freaking back road that I'd learned over the years, and I couldn't do it. So there was nothing I could do. I mean, Glenn Hoddle wasn't particularly happy, but it was just one of those scenarios. So I think nowadays all that's taken away because the players go away either the night before or whatever. So these little things are sometimes they're out of your hands. That, you know, you get stuck in traffic in London, pitching up for a game, you're trying to get there an hour and a half, 2 hours before. All of a sudden, there's a gridlock. Correct. You're not getting there to 45 minutes before. That's going to be annoying.
Right. But the one point that Jan makes is that there has to be a responsibility from the players as well to be able to understand that this is what's the standard. And sometimes it's a lot easier to then sit there and act like a schoolmaster at, you know, for six-year-olds. Sometimes it's easier to be like, look, this is a standard. Can you do it? Oh, you can't? Okay, goodbye. Let's find someone who can.
This is why you guys are all doing the media jobs instead, right? Don't want to be giving out those roles.
We don't want to be that person.
Like
to be authentic.
All right. Casey, I'll start with you. I'll ask everybody. If you guys could have one superpower, what would you like to have and why?
I mean, obviously flying's easy, but for those of us who do have to fly around, if you could teleport and I could go, okay, back in Seattle tonight and then come back in the morning, and that'd be pretty
darn
cool.
That'd be a cool one.
Yeah.
Craig?
I would like to just I'd like to just become invisible whenever I felt like it.
You are Craig.
Particularly when some people are talking, just to take myself out of the equation. Particularly when I'm getting angry and I'm starting to froth at the mouth, just press a button and I just go for a period. It'd be great, that, wouldn't it? I'm checking out. I'm having an hour.
It would look a bit strange if it happened to you.
It's a bit like my schedule, really.
But then we'd know that one of us had been annoying you if you just disappeared.
Well, rather than me sitting here going...
like we all don't know when that happens.
Yeah. I never ever show when I'm getting annoyed. That's the good thing. You can never tell, Jan.
Everton.
We wanted Craig to have that invincible superpower.
Don't bring me into it, Jan.
I will take it down to the floor, because I will take it down to the daily thing that I got a lot of superpowers in different rooms in the house, but I don't have it in the kitchen. So I would like to make food, because every man 54 like myself, in every party I am, the man is cooking. He's doing everything. They know everything about food. I don't know anything. I have to Google egg and bacon. So I'm so bad. So there is the daily superpower I would like to have.
So you're telling me you're only a notch worse off than Stevie Nicol at being able to look after yourself?
Yeah, but as I said, Craig, in other rooms of the house, I got superpower, and okay. Stephen Nicol doesn't have that.
No, you're right. He's just useless at all different aspects.
Well, we'll leave it. That was a nice question to end it with.
Yes. It's not news.
Yeah, it is not news.
I can't see Craig. Craig, I can't see him. He's got the superpower. I can't see him.
Yeah, no. By the way, apparently that's something the viewers would like to have as well. They have the ability to just switch me off.
Or a mute button.
And my boss, which is rather worrying.
All right, that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for
I'll switch myself off when there's a 48-team World Cup.
Yeah,
don't you worry about that.
He's not going to talk about that ever again, only to complain about it. Join us every single day, 7 days a week. We're always here.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.